105.9 Academy FM.
BizConnect.
Promoting and connecting businesses in Kent and around the world.
Tweet us at Kent_biz.
Good afternoon, everybody, and thank you so much for joining the BizConnect radio show today with myself, Martin White. And always, we have two super guests with us in the studio. I'm going to ask them to introduce themselves. To my right, we have...
My name's Vicky Beattie, and I'm Head of Quality, Safety and Environment at the Port of Dover.
Vicky, lovely to have you in the studio today. And to my left...
I'm Bruce Kidd, and I'm one of the directors at Operational Accounting Systems.
Fantastic, Bruce. Lovely to see you as well. The theme of today's show will be very much around, certainly the first part of the show, will be very much around sustainability and all of the excellent work that Vicky and her teams are doing down at the Port of Dover. And then in the second part of the show, we're going to be talking software solutions and in particular, bespoke software solutions and how they can improve business efficiency and business performance. So, two quite different interviews, but hopefully lots of insight and food for thought as always. We're going to play a little bit of music, and when we come back, we're going to have a chat with Vicky. So join us straight after this.
Academy FM Folkestone.
BizConnect,
the show that promotes and connects businesses.
Welcome back to the BizConnect radio show today, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning in today. As we were saying before the break, we've got two super guests with us in the studio. As always, we've got Vicky Beattie from Port of Dover, and we have Bruce Kidd from Operational Accounting Systems with us. Lovely to have you with us today, guys.
Thank you.
Vicky, if we could start with you, please. Port of Dover, incredibly iconic, very emotive, obviously, so much history. On a commercial level, give us an overview, if you can, in terms of the sheer scale of the operation that's going on down at the port today. Obviously, we've got freight movement, we've got passenger traffic movements through the port, but we've got a cruise terminal, and we've got a marina as well. So just paint us a picture with some numbers, if you can, in terms of what's actually happening.
Yes, of course. So, yeah, let's start with the ferries, which is the area that most people sort of visualise when they think of the Port of Dover. So the Port of Dover is Europe's busiest ferry port. It handles around a little more than a third of all UK-EU trade. That's worth £144 billion per year.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's pretty huge. Each year, we measure our figures of all of the transport that comes through the port. So each year, roughly more than 2 million freight vehicles pass through the port. Also 2 million tourist vehicles and 10 million passengers. So gosh, that's through the ferry port itself.
Yeah.
On a busy weekend, that could be as many as 15,000 tourist vehicles. We could have to handle maybe 250 to 300 coaches in a given day. So that's an awful lot of vehicles and associated passengers to handle.
Yeah.
Since COVID, we've seen an increase of over 200% in coach traffic and a 65% increase in passenger volumes compared to 2022. So numbers really are increasing as people are... not just the freight route, but tourists are also using the Port of Dover again to go across to the continent. But you're right, you mentioned some other things we do at the port. Yes, the ferries are the most iconic element, if you like. But we also welcome more than 120 cruise ships each year. That's 25 different cruise lines that actually use the Port of Dover. And we can handle, you know, anywhere up to around 200,000 guests each year passing just through the cruise part of our business. We also have cargo. On average, we have around 150 cargo vessels each year, and we handle all sorts of cargoes, from fresh produce to containers. There's project cargoes, some general cargoes, bulk cargoes such as grain, and also an element of railroad traffic. And all of this is handled through our relatively new now, it's only a couple of years old, state-of-the-art refrigerated warehouse and terminal, and obviously the outdoor areas as well. So, yeah, they're the three main sort of handling elements. But we also do, as you mentioned, have a marina.
Yeah.
And around 4,000 leisure craft use our marina each year. Obviously, we recently redeveloped that whole area, and the new marina is now in operation. But it's not just about trade and transport. We've obviously got a pretty vibrant and growing property portfolio. And hopefully many of you have noticed the difference that we're making, the transformation that's undergoing on the waterfront, and the new amenities being made available at the waterfront across Dover. What we hope is that we're doing our part to make Dover a really great place to be and a great place to live, work and enjoy, as you mentioned, the iconic elements of the castle of Dover, the White Cliffs and the surrounding areas.
Yeah. It's quite staggering, isn't it, Ruth? I mean, those numbers are mind-boggling. I think if anybody wants to sort of see that operation sort of firsthand, looking down, as it were, the White Cliffs experience, the walk along the cliffs there, really give you a unique perspective on all of that, don't they? Because you are literally looking down on the port and everything that's going on.
Yeah, it's funny you mention that. So most new starters get taken up to the National Trust property that overlooks the Eastern Docks, and similarly the Western Heights on the Western Docks. Within the first week, I generally take any new starters with my team up there, because you do get that bird's eye view where you can talk through the whole process and see all of the operations together. It is a great vantage point up there. Also, they do really great tea and coffee and slices of cake. So.
Yeah, particularly at the South Foreland Lighthouse, if you make it all the way across to there. So yeah, absolutely. I mean, it really is quite staggering, because when you do see the operation from on high, as it were, it doesn't actually look that large in terms of the sort of, you know, the land area that you have to manage all of that traffic. It doesn't actually look that large a space. So presumably efficiency in terms of, you know, how you process traffic, passenger traffic, cargo traffic and everything else is paramount with all of that, I assume.
Absolutely. For the volume of vehicles and tourists that we have to handle, it is a postage stamp piece of ground, as you've mentioned.
Yeah.
And that's why all the planning, all of the work that all the teams do, and our fellow agencies that help us to operate the port, you know, why that is absolutely imperative. And we work very hard to try and get everything through our small space as quickly as they can and as efficiently as we can.
Yeah. And how many actual ferry sort of docking terminals do you have now down at Dover? I've got a figure of 8 in my mind for some reason.
Yeah, at the moment I believe there are 5 operational, sometimes 6 operational berths.
Right.
So that's for the ferries. Uh-huh. So we have up to 13 ferries working, going backwards and forwards non-stop all day, every day. The only day that the port is closed is Christmas Day.
Yeah.
And it's around about a little over 50 vessel movements every day, which is why our route is so key to the sort of the conveyor belt of trade between us and the EU, because there's so many options. If you were to miss a ferry at the Port of Dover, you've got another one, you know, certainly within the hour.
Mm.
Whereas if you were at some of the other ports in the country, you may have to wait another whole day or the vast majority of the day before you pick up the next scheduled sailing. So that's what makes us so attractive, the short journey time and the frequency of the transit across the channel.
But nevertheless, as you say, that the demand is such that it's difficult to kind of to keep pace with it in many ways, isn't it? I know Ramsgate and Thanet District Council are looking at restarting ferry operations, you know, from the Port of Ramsgate, for example. So there's clearly a demand that they see in the marketplace, and I guess in terms of expansion, existing operations like yourselves can only cope with so much more, you know, additional demand before, you know, that starts to put pressure on the system as well.
Yeah, I mean, I guess so. I mean, obviously, natural reason why we're in the area we are is the geography, the natural geography. We are at that closest point between us and the continent, and you know, Ramsgate isn't far away, so it you know, it's pretty close itself. But you know, there's been a port at Dover of some sort since before 1606 when we signed our charter, since way before then. And it just proves that, you know, this has always been a popular route.
Yes.
And for certain cargoes, certain types of freight, particularly the refrigerated market, that speed of crossing, that close proximity, the frequency of our crossings, you know, it makes it very attractive to a number of different cargoes.
So tell us specifically now about your role as head of safety and quality and environment. That sounds like an incredibly large responsibility to me, keeping all of those movements within the port safe, for example, all of those people using the port, but also clearly with an eye on the environment. And we're going to talk about that in the second part of the show, but just give us a feel for your day to day, Vicky.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, but when I'm talking about these numbers, it suddenly scares myself. Yeah, just how much we are responsible for. We are the Port Authority, so we are responsible for what goes on within our port environment, and that goes along with sort of the health and safety of all those people that are working and using the port. We estimated last year that around 15,000 passes were issued. There's the security passes that allow you access onto the port.
Yeah.
So that gives you an indication just of the number of people working on. They don't all work for the Port of Dover, but they're many of our partner agencies, contractors, subcontractors and the like. Mm. But the port has a responsibility to keep all of those people safe while they're undertaking their roles and responsibilities on the port. So there's a lot of people to manage, let alone all of the vehicle movements, the cargo activities, the cruise activities. So health and safety is a big part of my role, being head of safety, quality and environment. I have a safety team of around five people at the moment. I have an environment team, similar numbers. And then I have an individual that supports on the quality side. So that's managing our internal audit processes and our management systems, written management systems that help us to gain certification to ISO standards for health and safety, environment and quality. So we have within our team at the moment, as well as some advisors, we also have two student placements on the environment side, and one health and safety graduate was recently recruited. So we have a really nice blend within the team of experience in terms of many of the advisors, but equally some innovations and youth, some good research capability and new idea creation in terms of innovation within the team as well, with the students and the graduates. So got a lovely blend. And if I think about what we have to do as a team, I guess I could, overall, across all three functions, we have a number of sort of things that we need to make sure that we're helping the port to do. And I suppose on a proactive side, we've got our compliance role and more of an advice and mentoring role, a monitoring role, and then a bit more of a reactive role. So I just thought I'd just quickly run through each of those. Compliance, we've got so many legal requirements that we need to make sure that on all fronts, health, safety and environment, that we make sure that we adhere to, and also that our certifications that we hold, that we work to those requirements. We have to provide lots of mentoring support and advice to managers and their teams. On the monitoring side, we've got to make sure that we're doing all of that right. And so we have to monitor and measure the performance of health and safety and environment across the port. And then on the reactive side, we've also got an element of investigating accidents, incidents, and making sure that we learn from those to prevent them recurring again.
Yeah, fantastic. Great. Well, I think what we're going to do, we're going to play a little bit of music. When we come back, I want to really focus in on everything you're doing locally in terms of social value, within the community locally, but also, crucially, everything you're doing on an environmental level to actually take the port towards a sort of a net zero objective as well. So do stay with us, and we'll be right back after this.
Academy FM Folkestone.
BizConnect, the show that promotes and connects businesses.
Well, Welcome back to the BizConnect radio show, everybody. We're talking with Vicky Beattie from Port of Dover at the moment, all about her wide-ranging role. Vicky's just been telling us all about the health and safety aspects of her role at the port, but she's also been giving us some fascinating insight into the sheer scale of the operations down at Port of Dover. Vicky, what I'd like to do now, if we can, please, is talk more about your role with regard to environmental responsibility, specifically net zero, because I know you have a target across your operations to achieve net zero by 2030. But also you mentioned something in the first part of the interview around your important role in the local community and social value in terms of local employment, local economy, and of course, local environment. So if we can start with sustainability and net zero, just tell us about the commitments that you've made there at Port of Dover, please.
Yeah, sure. It's something that we're really proud of and have been working on for quite some time. So last April, we launched our three key commitments on the net zero journey. The first one being that we would aim to be net zero for carbon equivalents by 2025, and that's for our scope 1 and 2 emissions, so the things that we have direct control over that we can directly improve. We then have a second commitment that expands that scope to include some specified sort of scope 3 emissions, so that's widening out to cover things like emissions from our purchased products and services, some business travel and such like. So our target for the scope 1, 2 and some elements of scope 3 is 2030.
That's incredibly ambitious, isn't it? Because the government target obviously for the UK is 2050. You've come out and set your stall out and said we're going to achieve that 20 years earlier. So is that reflective of the desire and the ethos within Port of Dover to just move more quickly because of the need? Or, you know, how has that come about? How's that 2030 target come about?
So yeah, I mean, in short, it comes from the top.
Yeah.
So when we were proposing our net zero targets to the executive team, we definitely wanted to do this from the point of view of making sure that this was justified by fact. So it's an evidence-based set of targets. So we had evidence base back from 2007, particularly around our carbon footprint data. So we were able to put forward that we would want to be net zero by 2030, and that's what we put forward to the exec. But I have to say, it was our CEO, Doug, himself, who actually said, that's not ambitious enough. I want to be one of the first ports, if not the first port, to achieve this. So we went back, we had a look, and that's when we broke it down more into what can we actually achieve sooner. So that's why we split up our targets to things that we can directly control outwards towards things that we have a bit less influence over. So yeah, it came from the top. 2025 for the things that we can directly control is our current target. 2030 for the things a little outside.
Yeah.
And then we have the longer term ambition, which includes much more of the value chain, and that is to be a green corridor.
Yeah.
And although we haven't specified a specific date for that, we've started work on that right now.
Yeah, and one of the things within there presumably will include the electrification of your landside, ferry operations and commercial shipping. So, you know, at the moment, I guess, you know, ferries arrive at Dover. There's a fairly quick turnaround, as you were saying in the first part of the show. So I guess they leave their engines running. Lorries and cars disembark, lorries and cars embark and then leave again. But all the time those engines are running in preparation for the next scheduled service. So electrification of all of that is going to be a key part of that, presumably.
It is, absolutely. And this is part of our Green Corridor work that we're doing as a port with a number of different consortiums and memorandums of understanding with the ports on the and ferry operators. So, yeah, the first thing is something that we can help the ferries work on is to electrify, if you like, the vessels themselves. So one of the operators has just brought in their first hybrid ferry that arrived just over a week ago. And we actually used that ferry as a first model in one of our first clean maritime demonstration project competitions. And what we actually did was working with a couple of universities, so University of Kent, University of Warwick, and Schneider, and ourselves and the operator, we started to model, well, what does it look like for that hybrid ferry? Can we get to a point where we can not only provide it power at birth, but can it do a full crossing? So could it be fully electrified?
Wow.
What that study showed is, yes, it can. But what we found was the energy demands due to the amount of energy that the ferry would require, plus the speed at which it needs to be transferred, because the ferries are only in port for around 45 minutes. We have a big energy deficit here at the port. And in fact, it's not just the port, it's this part of the country. Dover as a town has quite a restriction on the amount of energy available. But what we found is we definitely have an energy deficit. And that project sort of highlighted that, which has enabled us subsequently to apply for a second clean maritime demonstration competition where we're currently running in that. We're a little over halfway through that. It's due to end at the end of August. And this will help us to map out and provide a business case of, well, how do we deliver a green corridor? So it's looking at all sorts of things from the full value chain, as you mentioned, not just our direct customers, which are the vessels, but actually their customers too, in terms of cars and coaches and HGVs, looking at all of that value chain. And then looking at how could we provide a port system and the route between ourselves and Calais Dunkirk, how can we green that? How can we make that an electrified route? What is the best option to make this a net zero route, or at least a zero emission route?
And there's no quick answers to any of that, are there, clearly? And it's very much around, you know, collaboration, getting all parties together, you know, setting an agenda that everybody is working to, and ultimately working in partnership to achieve it. I mean, that's I think in terms of scope three and wider kind of emissions as part of net zero, that's really the key to the success there ultimately, isn't it? It's working in partnership with other people. And
it absolutely is. And our this second consortium expanded the first. We now not only include the universities ourselves, but we have local consultancies working with us, JG Maritime. We also have all of the ferry operators now involved in the consortium. We do have the ports from across the water involved in the consortium as well. And as well as working a bit outside, you know, this has all got to be financed one way or another, and it doesn't come cheap, either providing the infrastructure to provide the power to the port, but then even within the port, getting the power from the front door, so to speak, to the vessels, and then designing and building an actual physical connector that will cope with three different types of ferries from three different operators on different berths with our tidal ranges and all of the nuances that make Dover, you know, specific, and then being able to replicate that on the other side of the water. You know, all of that comes with a lot of need for knowledge, expertise, and ultimately it comes at a cost.
Yeah, so I'm thinking this will be a world first. This green shipping corridor between Dover and Calais will probably be a world first.
There are a few in the world. But certainly we think for an international route within the UK, it does look like this could well be with the right investment, and if we can move as quickly as we'd like, it could well be. But there are some that are successfully doing it in other parts of the world, which we are trying to learn from, but none of them are quite the same with the same challenges that we have here.
Yeah, and you mentioned obviously energy infrastructure and you know, availability of enough juice, for want of a better word, to be able to kind of electrify operations. But of course, that's got to be green energy as well at the same time. It's not just the, you know, UK Power Networks infrastructure to be able to plug into, but it's, you know, where is that energy kind of being generated? And that's a key challenge as well at the moment, I believe, you know, in terms of getting the sheer volume of renewable energy projects plugged into the grid, so that that energy, that green energy, is actually available for people like you to use moving forward. So massive, massive challenges. Vicky, tell us how people can find out more about all of this and all of the great work that you're doing down at Port of Dover. Is it on your website, for example?
Yes, absolutely. So, yeah, we have the Port of Dover website. It was recently launched just, again, a week or so ago, along with the sort of followed along behind the rebranding and the launch of our new vision, mission, purpose and values. So, yes, it is portofdover.com. Nice. Perfect. And simple, so you Perfect. Can get straight there. And, yes, all of the information around our new, the statement of intent around sustainability mm-hmm. is on there, as yeah. well as all sorts of information yeah. around how to get to a news and move through the port.
Yeah. Brilliant. And it is a fascinating read. So, do if you have 5 minutes, do take a look at that. Brilliant. Vicky, thank you so much for being with us today. It's been fascinating to hear all of the great work that you guys are up to down at the port. It really is groundbreaking in many ways, a lot of the work that you're doing. So fantastic. And all credit to you and your teams down there. We're going to play a little bit of music. When we come back, we're going to talk to our second guest today, Bruce Kidd from Operational Accounting Systems. So do stay with us, and we'll be right back after this.
Academy FM Folkestone.
Biz Connect,
the show that promotes and connects businesses.
Welcome back to the second part of the BizConnect radio show today. We've been talking to Vicky Beattie from Port of Dover, and we're now going to have a chat with our second studio guest today, Bruce Kidd from Operational Accounting Systems. Bruce, welcome to the studio.
Thank you, Martin. Thank you very much for having me again.
Always a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you.
Bruce, paint a picture for us, if you can, in terms of OASIS, Operational Accounting Systems, what you do and how you support businesses ultimately to make their operations more efficient.
No problem. So OASIS, and I'm going to call us OASIS, most people know us as that. That's our trading name instead of the long name of Operational Accounting Systems Limited. So OASIS is a software company. We're a value-added reseller for several software companies around the UK and internationally. And within this, we offer software. We offer software support, consultation, advanced software development. We offer project management. And I think one of the most important things we offer is system design. And that is what helps our customers streamline the processes that they use to achieve the profits that mm. they have within the business. Mm. So the systems we supply include things like ERP software, payroll and HR software. We do P11D software, CRM software, service and help desk management software, digital proof of delivery software, inventory optimization software, business intelligence reporting, construction industry software, document management and invoice automation. I think I've left quite a few out there in the list. But I think it's important to mention this, because these software covers everything a business can do.
Yeah.
And within that, we cover all the industries that you can imagine. The biggest four industries we deal with are wholesale and distribution, construction industry, manufacturing, and then to a lesser degree, the service industries. So what is it that makes OASIS different? Well, I believe it's the people in the organization. Mm. We are quite a small company, but we are all very dedicated specialists in what we do. Our first motivation is not money. And I think that is very often something that's overlooked in a software company. Our first purpose is to help our customers. Mm. That is the main thing we do. With the kind of experience we have as well, I think that is important. So we have someone like Alex Ahern. Alex has been with OASIS for just over 20 years. She runs the administration side of our business. She deals with implementing software, and she also runs our help desk. Alex comes from a bookkeeping and accounting background, which is vitally important for the work we do with our customers, especially when we solve solutions. And in respect of that, she's become a solution solver. And that is what our customers want, because they call us when they have a problem. Mm. We have Peter Griggs. Pete's our developer. He's been with OASIS for over 20 years.
And honestly, what he doesn't know about development isn't worth knowing. And he is the main person that focuses on developing the software for our customers' needs. Then we have myself. I've been in the company for 17 years. I run sales and marketing operations. However, my background is in auditing and finance and accounting. I started life as an auditor in Ernst & Young many years ago. And in the process, I learned that to get things right and to look at detail is what is so important. And I've brought that with me into Oasis. And I don't call myself a salesman. I call myself a solution solver. I solve problems and then I give you a solution for that. Yeah. Then we have also Jody and we have Edward. They are inherently our software support, helping our customers on the phone, doing implementations, doing training to our customers, doing reports and document design and that kind of thing. Yeah. And I think it's so important to remember that we've amassed this team of people whose first purpose when it comes to working for our customers is to have that satisfaction of solving their problems. Mm. Or to sit back and to say, oh, I've saved Mavis 2 hours this week because I could write her a report or whatever. And I think that is really important because that ethos of how we work is brought forward in everything we do with our customers.
So is the end goal usually an efficiency gain for the business? Is that really what we're talking about?
Absolutely.
Here?
Mm-hmm. The gain is efficiency, but also time.
Mm.
Because if you save time, you can spend that time on your business rather than in it.
Yeah.
So it's really important. And I would say most of the work we do is about saving time. And that in turn, you know, that turns into a profit or a value or whatever that is. Mm. But that is the biggest thing we do.
So in the context of the current labour market, for example, because, you know, so many businesses are struggling to recruit the people that they need or feel that they need in order to grow their business. The flip side of that is, you know, if you can make your business operations more efficient, then you may not actually need as much human resource, physical bodies as you think.
If you can work cleverer in your business, then you don't need the manual time to input. You know, just something stupid like importing 8,000 people's timesheets compared to manually entering that. I mean, there's no comparison really, is there? So that is what we do,
And in terms of, you know, the various kind of software packages out there, presumably, I guess, for some clients, there's an immediate kind of out-of-the-box solution that will kind of work for their business that you can kind of tap into. For other clients, it might be taking that software solution and actually tailoring it and sort of programming it slightly differently to work specifically for their business and their requirement. Is that right?
That's totally correct. I think all the software we sell comes out of the box as a blank system that you set up for purpose for the customer that's going to use it. However, I would say there's between 20 to 30% of customers who's got an additional need outside of what comes out of the box.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what the bespoking side is we offer. That could be anything from adding one field that records an additional date or an additional reference to something that pulls data in from another system, to something that pulls data to and fro systems, or to a totally new process or a totally new job module within the system that manages a total process that's external to what they've normally done.
Yeah, so linking to, you know, other database systems, for example, within the business to pull specific data sets from. And I'm assuming front end as well. You know, people have different kind of front end requirements, don't they, in terms of user experience and everything else. So all of that can be facilitated.
That's correct. I mean, there are so many different kinds of bespoke that you can look at. So, like I said, the smallest kind is adding a couple of fields and the user interface. The customer wants to record an additional reference, an initial date. And what they normally do is they take the data from their system, download it in Excel, manually enter the data, then they can analyze what they do.
Yeah.
By adding a bit of bespoke field in there, they can then do that all in the system without that manual element. So something like that small a field could save 2 or 3 hours a week in someone's work. Yeah. But then you can move on to that. A lot of companies use time and attendance systems, for example. Those systems don't normally link to anything. So what you do is you download your data in Excel and then you bash it in manually in your system. Mm. What we do is we've created links that would pull that data via Excel. You map it correctly. It just pulls the data and does some rules and regulations and validating in the process. So again, what the biggest impact for that on the customers is elimination of errors. Mm. You know, imagine you've got a workforce of 8,000 people who work on a weekly basis. Mm. You know, eliminating 10% of the errors that normally happens is thousands of pounds worth of value to them. Yeah. And, of course, the time saving, you know.
And I know you were particularly busy through COVID with payroll, for example, and facilitating, you know, furlough payments and all the kind of, you know, additional work that needed to be done around that. But what now we've kind of we've left that behind. What's kind of hot at the moment? What are businesses kind of coming to you with a need for at the moment? Is it because of an inability to actually just, you know, procure resource in the kind of the labour market? Are they looking for, you know, AI solutions, for example, to problems? What's hot at the moment?
It's so difficult to say for us because what is currently the biggest thing for us is customers who need to change how they work. Mm-hmm. So that sounds a really simple thing, but you know, when you've got a massive system that produces a 300 million turnover profit for you, you can't just overnight change that system. Mm. So I find at the moment is moving forward, moving digitally, adding, I don't know, warehouse management onto your system or that kind of thing is what they do. Mm-hmm. And you are right. A lot of the changes we are currently picking up is driven by the fact that customers can't afford additional labor because, you know, with increases in the cost of living and the electric pricing and the manufacturing pricing going up, they just can't afford that anymore.
Yeah, fantastic. Good. We're going to play a little bit of music. When we come back, Bruce, I'd like to understand the process for, you know, perhaps how a business identifies that they have a need and how they then engage with you ultimately to kind of to have a conversation about what you might be able to do for them. So do stay with us and we'll be right back after this.
Academy FM Folkestone.
Biz Connect,
the show that promotes and connects businesses.
Welcome back to the final part of the BizConnect, a radio show today, everybody. We've had a really interesting conversation with Vicky Beattie from Port of Dover in the first part of the show, and now Bruce Kidd from Business Software Specialists Operational Accounting Systems. Bruce, before the break, we were talking about the fact that more and more businesses are coming to you because they're not able to access the labour market, perhaps in the way that they may have been able to in the past. There is clearly a scarcity of human resource out there, and also there's a huge affordability issue, I think, for businesses as well, you know, as they're looking to grow. And I guess ultimately for many businesses it's more cost effective for them to look at business processes and systems and implement a solution there than it is to actually just, you know, bring in an extra body, you know, to take on that additional workload perhaps as the business grows. But what is the process behind that, Bruce? You know, how does a business first of all identify that actually they're not perhaps running as efficiently as they could be in a kind of an operational sense? And then, you know, how do they actually, you know, engage with you to have a conversation about how they might be able to improve that?
Yeah, I think it's important to remember that all the customers that we have development work for are a customer of ours already. So we're very familiar with them and we're very familiar with the help desk issues that they are facing on a daily basis because they call us. Mm-hmm. So from that, we could very often identify when there is a process that might have to be introduced or something that might to be changed. That's normally the smaller part of development. With a bigger kind of project where there's a real need for change, we tend to identify this on the back of having a meeting with our customer to try and identify how we can correct a process or add a process, or they might have a brand new requirement. And that is normally how the process starts off. So it's a very much a discussion-led thing to understand what they want, why the system can't offer that, and why it might have to be developed. So on a very high level starting point. That then progresses through a process that we offer, you know, because obviously the developer has to go away. He needs to go then and write up the specification of what we've discussed, even down to the point of you click here, you click on that, this is the information you put in. And from that, the customer would then agree to the specification. We would build a prototype of that software for them to test. During this testing process, we would constantly develop changes or things they think, oh, actually, we didn't think that was going to be as right as we thought. So it's a constant process of development until we finished and everybody goes, yeah, we're happy with that. And then they finally test it. And then we go on a live process of training everybody up and what's going to happen and how they're going to use the new system.
Presumably, though, if I'm a business that, you know, doesn't have an existing relationship with you, but does, you know, use another software solutions provider, but I don't necessarily feel that, you know, I'm getting the solutions that I need, you know, to take my business forward, I can have that conversation with you as well, presumably, as a new customer potentially.
Oh, absolutely.
To say, look, you know, this is kind of currently what we've got. We've got some legacy systems. We're not quite sure they're delivering what we need them to deliver within the business. How can we have a conversation together? And presumably they can pick up the phone and they can arrange a meeting with you to
do absolutely.
That.
I mean, we have several customers that has development from us that is not an specific Oasis software customer. Mm-hmm. They might be a customer of another reseller, or what we often have is systems that we link together through development. So we've got a system called EasyStock. We've got a system called Pegasus, and to manage the two systems, we've written a link to pull the information to and fro the two systems. Mm-hmm. I have just started picking customers up who's read online that I've developed this link to EasyStock. They're an EasyStock customer. They're also a Pegasus customer, but they're not my Pegasus customer or my EasyStock customer.
Yeah.
But now they are my customer because they've got a link to link the two systems, which means their developer don't have to then go and develop that utility. Uh-huh. We've already done it.
Okay, that's interesting.
So yeah, that's how I pick up a lot of customers that sit outside of our organization.
Yeah.
The development is the link for us for that.
So assuming I have an identified need, how can I contact you to have a conversation about, you know, what you might be able to deliver ultimately for me in terms of a solution? And do you offer an initial, you know, meeting for a business? You know, it might be, the finance director or the finance manager to have that initial, or the IT guy as well to have that initial conversation. How does it work? How do we get in touch?
So I can be found online at our website www.o-a-sys.co.uk. So it is oasis.co.uk. It's quite a busy website where you'll find lots of things happening on our customer pages, but I am reachable through there, also through LinkedIn, Facebook, and all the normal channels where you would expect businesses to be on. I offer this process is a free process, mm-hmm. and I also see it as a bit of a business consultation.
Yeah.
Because the most important thing in the process of selling to anybody is getting to know them and building a relationship so that you actually understand what you're going to have to deliver to them. Yeah. So that is where it starts. So I offer that for free because from there we can then decide, I help you or no, you need to go to someone else because they might be able to help you better.
So don't worry, just, you know, pick up the phone, you know, send an email, get in touch. But I think the other thing we should mention is you do a lot of free webinar training events as well,
don't you?
You know, Pegasus-based, you know, XRL and all sorts of stuff.
Absolutely. You know, like any other business, we also looked internally and thought, we can't afford to get another person in. Mm-hmm. How am I going to get my customers to call us less?
Yeah.
And that's something really stupid. But by educating and knowledge, you can actually get people to understand what they are doing. Yeah. So I set off on that on an annual basis, every month, one webinar teaching people what to do.
Yeah, fantastic. And that's a free resource again that's available
totally
to
free.
Book onto via your again, website, via your website. Events and webinars and seminars Correct. Are on there. So.
Our customer zone has got loads yeah. of stuff happening yeah. and training seminars yeah. and free
Brilliant.
Events.
So there's loads of free value add out there in addition Correct. To the pick up the phone, let's have a chat about your business requirements. Fantastic. Bruce, thank you so much for that. Fascinating insight into your world as well. Vicky, thank you again for joining us in the studio today. I think, you know, people out there will certainly have a much better understanding of the scale of the operation now that's going on at Port of Dover and also the future. And what that holds, which is really exciting, obviously, as well. We have come to the end of the show. We will be back in 2 weeks' time with another couple of studio guests. But for now, I think all that remains to do is to say thank you so much for tuning in today. And thank you again to our studio guests for being with us. And we'll catch up with you again in a couple of weeks' time. So bye for now.
Bye.
Goodbye. Thank you.
105.9 Academy FM Folkestone.
Biz Connect,
the show that promotes and connects businesses.